about it in the past in Isaiah 14, where Satan says he's going to rise up and he's going to overcome God and sit in the congregation the size of the north. I want to point out that every time you read the word congregation in the Bible, it's referring to the children of Israel. We can sit among the congregation the size of the north. I have gone over this in the past. We're not going to do it now, but I present that the size of the north is reference to America. America is the kingdom of God on the size of the north. Since the beginning of time, since the very inception of time, Satan has been in this rebellion. Rebellion against God, and consequently against the children of God, his offspring in the earth. The primary target of this rebellion, the primary target is America. It is not Taiwan. It is not Kenya. It is not some other third world country. It is not Cambodia or Venezuela or the Congo. The primary target is the United States of America. America is the target of this rebellion. And it looked like the rebellion was fully in, or America was fully in the grasp of the rebellion. And then the election of Donald Trump came. And I want to caution people that I'm not aware I'm not saying that Donald Trump is the answer to America's woes. We know it's not. But there definitely was a resistance to the rebellion, evidenced by the election of Donald Trump. There was a resistance to the rebellion. We find today, as you all know from watching the news, is that there have been protests, and they call them protests, protests with a quote, in every major city in America. Philadelphia, well, maybe I shouldn't say every major city, but definitely in major cities. In Philadelphia, because there hasn't been a protest in Zinc. We all know Zinc is a major city. But Philadelphia, and Chicago, and New York, and Miami, and Portland, Oregon, and other places. Some of those cities where the protests have been made have not been reported. St. Louis is an example. Now, one of the things that I have always, when my kids were little, one of the first things I taught them was politics is war fought in time of peace. We are engaged in a war. People don't like to think about it that way. But we are engaged in a war. It's been a war been going on for many centuries. And today we are still engaged in a war, even though it seems sort of like a peaceful war, because it's been a political conflict. It nevertheless is a war. A race war was fought, or is being fought constantly, we understand. But last Tuesday was an example of a war. It was not an election. We think of it as an election, but in reality, it was a race war that was fought. The majority of the people who voted for Donald Trump were white. The majority of people who voted against Donald Trump were non-white. It's a race war. Even some of the news have pointed this out and have said that this was a battle fought between rural America and urban America. That's a code word for race war. They said that it was a battle fought between demographics. Those are code words for race war. They tell us that it was a war fought between a growing class of white people who felt that they were disenfranchised, who were gathered among the political process and joined the Republican Party. They came out in numbers, unbelievable. It's cold war or race war. There is a race war being fought in America today. Many universities taking this in consideration of this unhappy, the unhappiness that some people experience, they opened up some of the classrooms for people who were having a hard time processing the election of Donald Trump. And they provided hugs for the young people who were distraught. Some of them provided puppies for them to pet and kittens for them to pet. And some provided coloring books and poster boards so they could write their feelings out on poster boards and put them in the hallway. They let them know that this is a safe place for them to come and cry. And so it's really sad. But it's sad in a way that this is what our country has come to. What has happened to America? What has happened to this nation that has such a glorious beginning? That this is what we turned into? And many of those people in these protests were actually white kids. It wasn't all non-white. There were many white kids involved in those also. And I wonder myself, how did these white kids get flipped? We hear about people being flipped from one position to another. How did all these white kids get flipped? Here were kids who most likely when they're tiny, they're going to Sunday school and they're singing Jesus Loves Me and I Love Jesus. And by the time they got through the school system, by the time they got out of into college, and they got flipped into this element of rebellion and anarchy. In reality, what happened? They got disconnected. And how did they get disconnected? How did these kids get from loving Jesus and loving America and become disconnected? So they hate those very things that we as a nation one time embraced. Because one time they were connected. And they became disconnected. And the final message we hear, read about there in Malachi, is that the Spirit of Elijah is going to come and he's going to reconnect. There's going to be a reconnection. Basically, he's going to connect the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. And this is not referring to, as some people suppose, not referring to just a generation disconnection, but this is referring to a disconnection that occurred in a generational disconnection, where the people of this age, this day and age in which we live, this period of time, have been disconnected from their fathers. And that disconnection from the fathers also means they are disconnected from these children, their descendants. And he's referring to a time when the Spirit of Elijah is going to reconnect them. A love of our heritage, a love of our fathers and mothers and those who've gone on millenniums before us. And wanting to then reach down to their children and pass it on to their children and children's children and children into the generations to come. And you take a power cord, if I unplug it from the wall, the light goes out. And this is what has happened to America. Our life has gone up. We have become disconnected. And if you disconnect this power, this light over here, you pull it, unplug it, you hold it one in one hand and one in the other hand, you can beg, you can pray, you can fast, you can chant, you can roll down the aisle, you can do all kinds of incantations, and yet the light will not come back on. I don't care how many times you pray and ask Jesus to the light. I don't care how many times you chant and roll down the aisle until you plug it back into the source, until you plug it back in, you're going to remain disconnected. And the Satanic Rebellion knew this. They're aware of this. And they've been adamant in bringing about a disconnection of our generation. Why? Because without the connection, we as a nation will die. The fifth commandment, we know, the fifth commandment tells us to honor our father and our mothers. And this is more than just honoring mom and dad who's sitting down there at the old home place. This is honoring our forefathers and mothers. It's honoring all those coming forward. It's honoring those who have paved the way and set the course and passed down a system, ideas, and knowledge, and ideals, and values, and passed it down to us. We're to honor those things that have come before us, our fathers and our mothers. And why? The Bible is very clear as to why. It says, because if you honor your fathers and mothers, what does he say will happen? He says, your days may be long upon the land. Honor thy fathers and thy mothers, that thy days may be long upon the land that I give you. As he came into the promised land, that's what he's telling them. If you want to remain in this land, if you want to remain in this land and be blessed by myself, blessed by God, you have to honor your ancestors, honor those things. You have to claim, and we're going to see a couple examples there in a minute, claim your national identity. Claim who you are. And today, you know, we know that in the old days it was the land of Canaan, that was the land. But today, I believe that the land that was given to us in this day, generational, is America. America was the land that was given to us. We recognize it as a precious land. The pilgrims called it God's holy habitation. They called it a land marked and chosen by the finger of God. John Winthrop called it a city on a hill. Do we want to belong in this land? Do we want to be blessed in this land? He said, honor your fathers and your mothers. Honor those who come before you. Honor your ancestors. Stay connected. Because if you don't stay connected, your days upon the land will be short. America was a regathering place of Israel. It was the appointed place. It was his holy temple. It was built as John, can't get his name right now, but built to be as the greatest temple ever built for the worship of the Almighty. America was the land that God carved out of the wilderness. It was developed as a regathering place for his people Israel. Because Israel traveled westward out of Palestine, some sailed across the Mediterranean Sea to the Straits of Hercules and settled along the west coast of Spain and migrated up into Ireland and Scotland. Others crossed over the Caucasus Mountains or the Bosphorus Pass into the fertile plains of Eastern Europe. Then they went up to Germania, crossing the continent to France in 1066, where the conquerors of the Norman conquerors of England. While their cousins and their separated brethren, they traveled to Germania and into Scandinavia, and they became later known as the Saxons, who were defending England from the Normans. But they're all the same people. And from there, begins 1620, they followed the western sun to America. And 1620, a little band of pilgrims settled in Massachusetts. And by 1640, a short 20 years later, over 20,000 migrated to England. This land, America, was a regathering place for the sons and daughters of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Scripturally, America is called the Stone Kingdom and Joseph's land. We read in Deuteronomy 33, when Moses gives the promises and the future events of the various tribes of Israel, he points out one thing very odd. He refers to a land called Joseph's land. And we wonder, where is this land? He said, blessed of the Lord be his land. For the precious things of heaven, for the dew and for the heat that crouches beneath, and for the precious fruit brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things put forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the lasting hills, and for the precious things of the earth, and the fullness thereof. This land, this Joseph's land, it is here where the sons of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the daughters of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were fulfilling their manifest destiny. And God gave them in this land the greatest gift of all, because here in this land he liberated them from the shackles of tyranny, which had ruled over them ever since the days of Samuel, when they rejected God and chose a king and demanded a king to rule. Here it is appointed place. They will no longer bow before man, but will serve God directly as free and independent people. But now we face this great problem. We face this great rebellion that's upon our nation. Most disconnected, these people, the children of the Republic, from the forefathers. They recognize that if the rebellion is going to conquer this people, this who have been brought to this special land. I mean, who can even enter a contention that any other land in the world has had fulfillment of the blessings of God than America? Now, if they're going to conquer this land, if they're going to conquer this, it must be that they disconnect the children of the Republic from their forefathers. Disconnect them from their national identity. Everyone knows that the key to control the future of people is to capture the minds of the young people. Everybody knows that. Whether you're a Congress or a Christian or whatever you may be, we all know that controlling them in the minds of children is essential in capturing the future. If you capture a child's mind, then you can steer them in the right direction so they have a life of blessings. And if the enemy captures their mind, then they'll have a life of curses. That is why the Bible tells us in Deuteronomy 11:19, he tells them to take and train your children. He said, teach them. He said, when you sit in your house, and teach them when you go for a walk. Teach them when you're resting at night in your home. And teach them when you rise in the morning. And it doesn't mean you've got a child and you just lecture them. But by your life and by example, by things that are important to you, by things that you admire, things that you embrace, all those things are methods of teaching. Some people think they're supposed to sit down and just teach. Well, that doesn't mean it. It means your life. Let your life live a life of teaching. Everything you do. And then we read in Joshua where when Israel came to the promised land, he tells them, he said, gather a stone from each of the 12 tribes of Israel, represent the 12 tribes, and you make a monument. And he said, when the children asked, what is the purpose of this monument? He said, well, this represents the day that God delivered Israel, brought to the Holy Land. Told Scripture, remove not the ancient monuments, we're told. Don't remove the ancient landmark. Why is that? Why is it you don't remove the ancient landmark? Because they help us connect to our forefathers. Why is it they have these stones there? Why did you tell Joshua those stones? Because they represent a connection to their forefathers. Why did he tell them to teach your children when you get up and when you go for a walk and you lay down and you rest and all throughout the day? Why did he tell them that? Because it helps connect them to their forefathers. Because if you get disconnected, if you get disconnected, what do? You lose your identity. You lose your national identity of who you are as a people. And so he said, do these things. Not that the rocks themselves had great importance. The importance was they helped connection. The landmarks, they themselves are not holy in that by themselves, but they helped us connect. The monuments in our square throughout our country. When we look and see the monuments, of course, we see, and we see the monuments of our patriots. When we see the monuments of the southern soldiers, and even the northern soldiers who stood valiantly for a cause they believe in. But rather that this helps connect us. They help connect us with our past. And the enemy quite knows quite well that if you can disconnect us, so we put no value in our forefathers, no value in our heritage, no value in the nation that blessed us, if we put no value in those things, we're not going to fight to defend them. We've been disconnected. And I'm sure that when they built those stones there for that monument or other landmarks, I'm sure, I don't know, but the nature of people is the same. I'm sure that there were people who were saying, what is that purpose of that? What are you doing that for? And there were probably people saying, that don't mean anything. Tear them down. I'm sure there are people that felt that way. Why else would God say remove them not? Because there were people who wanted to remove them. They probably were saying, you're making an idol out of that thing. You're making an idol out of that landmark. You're making an idol out of those stones. You're making an idol out of those things. But God said, don't rebuke them. Why? Not that they have value themselves, but they help connect. They help connect us to our forefathers. And the enemy always wants to bring a disconnection. So they mock the stone, they mock the landmarks. And they do the same thing today. It hasn't changed. The idea to mock that those things would connect us is the same thing they want to do today. And they want to tear them down. So the idea is, if you can get into the head, if you can get into the head of the kids, then you can control the direction of the country. You can control the direction of their life. You just get in their head and disconnect them. If you just disconnect them, they're going to win the battle. And that's why we see all these kids protesting and marching and so forth. They've been going on for years. Because they've been disconnected. And there have been several things that have been going on to help bring about this connection. You had the radical extremists like Saul Alinsky working outside of the church. But then even within the church, you had people working for the disconnection, such as Harry Emerson Fosdick, who is a well-known, of course, people here probably have heard of him, but is a well-known liberal theologian back in, died sometime about 1960, I believe. And he was with the Federal Council of Churches, very liberal, socialist, progressive organization. So he worked within the church. And then today we have mild extremists, such as Joni and Marcus Lamb of Angel One Network, Angel Two Network on television. You have Kerry Shook, the preacher on TV, and you have John Hagee, you have Joel Osteen, and many other preachers. These are mild extremists. They don't come out flamboyantly screaming and hollering, demanding this, demanding that, but they slowly, insidiously disconnect the listeners, those who follow them, those who sit in their congregation. They slowly and progressively disconnect them. In 1928, the Satanic Rebellion was working to disconnect us. In the February issue of Century Magazine, which I've got the original in my home, didn't bring it here today, in the February edition of 1928, here's what they wrote down. He said, "We pulled down the beautiful and a generous structure you had built." This is written by Rabbi Marcus Revich. He said, "We have pulled down the beautiful, generous structure you had reared and changed the whole course of your history. You make much noise and fury about the undue Jewish influence in your movie theaters. But what is that compared to our staggering influence in your churches, your schools, your laws, your government, and the very thoughts you think every day?" And why is that? Why were those things so important to their agenda? Because they know how important our national identity is. If you can destroy that national identity, destroy that cohesion, that respect, if you can destroy that, you bring about what? The disconnection. In the books Toward Soviet America, written by William Z. Foster, his communist agent in America, the highest ranking communist in America back in the 50s and 40s, he wrote a book called Toward Soviet America. I've got a copy of that in my library also. Here's what he wrote. "Among the elementary measures the American Soviet government will adopt to further the cultural revolution are the following. The schools, colleges, and the universities will be coordinated and grouped together under the department, the National Department of Education, and its state and local branches. The studies will revolutionize, being cleansed of religious, patriotic, and other features of the bourgeoisie ideology." This book was written in 1932. William Z. Foster said, "Listen, we're going to get this Department of Education organized." Now, we have a Department of Education, but I don't in America. And because if you bring everything away from local control into the national control of this under the Department of Education, what are we going to do with it? Well, we're going to cleanse the people of all the crazy ideas of religion and patriotism and other features of that class. Why? Because that brings about the disconnection. If you can disconnect them and make them less patriotic and make them less religious, you disconnect them. It's important to bring about the disconnection. Catherine Barrett, former National Education Association in in an article in the NEA publication, 1978, here's what she wrote. We will need to recognize that the so-called basic skills, which currently represent nearly the total effort in elementary schools, will be taught in one quarter of the present school day. The remaining time will be devoted to what is truly fundamental and basic. Time for academic inquiry. Time for students to develop their own interests. Time for a dialogue between students and teachers. When this happens, and it's near, the teacher can rise to his true calling. More than a dispenser of information, the teacher will be a conveyor of values. A philosopher, teacher will no longer be victims of change. We will be agents of change. And that's what has happened. So that's why you got all these kids throughout the country, been going on for years, beginning with my generation, which I call the cursed generation. The 60s kids, the hippies, and progressively getting worse. It's because they've been disconnected. They no longer have in their heart a passion for this nation. The passion is taken out of them. They've been disconnected. Their national identity destroyed. They got into their heads. That's how you would have rebelled. You disconnect the people from their forefathers. No longer honoring their mother and their father. A lot of this was organized by the group called the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School was organized in Frankfurt, Germany, by Goethe University. And it was a communist element of the Communist Party, because most people today think of communism as a battle between the rich and the poor. And you read about look at Karl Marx, and Karl Marx thought that was going to be the case. He honestly believed that there's this battle between these two classes of people. And the battle was the workers. And if you get the workers all united together, they'll overthrow the boss, the wealthy people who struck society. That is what Karl Marx worked for. And when people look at what they call classic communism, that's still what they see. And yet, there was an element of people within the Communist Party who began to recognize that that wasn't enough. Because they discovered that people, the workers, would not unite. They thought all the workers would be angry at the rich people, and all the workers would unite. They found out the workers would not unite. And they found out the reason why. Why won't the workers unite? It's simple. Because the workers had a greater loyalty to family, a greater loyalty to nation, and a greater loyalty to the Christian faith. And so they thought, we can't get these people, because at one time we presented all the workers are victims. They're victims of the bourgeoisie, victims of the wealthy class. And if we get to all the workers united and recognize that they're a victim, they'll fight against and overthrow the power structure, and we'll march in with our new ideology. But it didn't work out that way. It might have worked out that okay among non-white people, I don't know, but among our people it wouldn't work. Why? Because our people had a greater sense of love of family. We had a greater sense of love of our country. We had a greater sense of love of our faith. And we're not going to unite in these worker rebellion. And so this think tank that was in Goethe University in Germany began to understand that if we want the people to unite, they have to somehow destroy. They have to destroy love of faith, family, and nation. And they begin doing it. We call that today cultural Marxism. It's called culture. So I see the term quite often on the internet or maybe Facebook, cultural Marxism. And that's what it means. It means it's not just an economic capitalist battle, but a battle between cultures. Cultural Marxism. The people had a greater love for the family and faith and for the nation. So the need was to disconnect them. They had to disconnect them from those elements that unified them. They had to disconnect them. University of Wisconsin Professor Duke Peschko. He spent years teaching Western literature. Years ago, he began to give his students a basic test to determine their knowledge of history and Western culture. It was his own curiosity, and so he began to give his students this test, to test their knowledge. And one issue particularly interesting because it kind of helped elevate the idea but the reality of white guilt. He says, on the issue of slavery, He said, my students could not tell me anything meaningful about slavery outside of America. In other words, the students thought slavery was strictly an American phenomenon. They are convinced that America was an American problem. Slavery was an American problem. They were very fuzzy about the history of slavery prior to the colonial era. Their entire education about slavery was confined to America. They think America started slavery. Why was that important? It's because if they could somehow get our students to think that that our forefathers, all those nasty people who lived back there at the formation of our country, they created slavery. Now we know it's not true, but they were working on this issue. Why? To help bring about a disconnection. Now, not everybody bought into it, obviously, but there are many who did. They bought into this disconnection. He asked students one thing. He asked them, what was the most significant quality or outstanding feature of Thomas Jefferson? And almost to a one, they said Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Only a very tiny minority even knew that Thomas Jefferson was the originator of the one who created Louisiana Purchase. Or that he was even president of the United States. They didn't know that. They just knew he started slavery. Why? It's not that issue, he started slavery, is so important, but it was important. Why? To bring about a disconnection. Professor Pesta said one disturbing trend was in the changing attitude of his students. Before the year 2000, he said, knowledge of history was horrible. The students at least seemed embarrassed about their ignorance. They may not have known historical events biographies of people and the events of our Constitution and the Republic and our independence and our war for independence. They may not know those stuff, but at least when they didn't know, they were embarrassed about it. He said, they were embarrassed about their ignorance. They knew that they didn't know, but they were at least embarrassed about it. But he said, at the beginning of the year 2000, something began to, he noticed changes. He said that not only did they not know, they were no longer embarrassed. Not only were they not embarrassed, they began to claim a moral superiority. That they were somehow better than those people. That they extended and excelled to greatness. And advanced, that they were now better than the founding fathers. He said, they cannot tell you many historical facts or relate anything meaningful about historical biographies. But they are, however, stringent, vocal about the corrupt nature of the Republic and the wickedness of the founding fathers. Now, like I said, all this began back in the 60s the offspring, you might say, of this Frankfurt School penetrated through our university, began at Columbia University, and penetrated through our university and began pushing their ideology. And so students are coming out of the 60s with this disconnection. He said students took on a moral superiority in not knowing anything about our racist and sexist history and our biased institutions. Now, I saw a living example of that right after the presidential election. I saw on Fox News a girl being interviewed at the New York protest. And she was asked, why is she protesting? Why are you here? Why are you demonstrating? And she said she was demonstrating against the injustices of America. The injustices of society. And then she said, I think I got the quote exactly right. Then she said, we, referring to the millennials, we are the most moral, loving and compassionate generation in history. We are better than those people. We are better than Washington and Jefferson and Adams. We're better than Patrick Henry. We're better than all the founders together at Independence Hall. We're better than them. We are now a more moral, more compassionate, loving people. A total disconnect. Prior to that, the disconnection was felt with a certain amount of guilt that he didn't know. But now he said, beginning of the year 2000, he knows something changed. Now they have a disconnection with better guilt proof. In fact, they're better, claiming immoral superiority. They have disconnected us. They have disconnected our nation. They well know that people do not love America will never fight to preserve America. Eldridge Cleaver, was a member of the Black Panther Party. And I've given this quote before in the past. Eldridge Cleaver, a member of the Black Panther Party. Here's what he said. He said, what has suddenly happened? He wrote this in his book, So on Ice. I've got a copy in my library. He wrote this, he said, what has suddenly happened is that the white race has lost its heroes. Worse, its heroes have been revealed as villains, and as great as heroes as the arch-villains. And that's what has happened in America today. All those people that connected us, well, they've been disconnected. Now we look upon them all villains, and evil people, and people that are, and whatever, that we've been disconnected from all the great things they benefit. We benefit from our society. And so we have schools out there that teach history. They spend more time on white guilt under the phrase of civil rights movement than they do about the history of our people. Totally disconnected. We wonder why we're in this trouble today in America? Because we've been disconnected. I forget who said this. It was a blogger on the internet. He said, when we perpetually fail to teach American history in schools, we inevitably weaken the nation because our children grow up without any real sense of national identity. See, that disconnection means you remove the national identity. You remove, the connection up is gone. Because we've lost our national identity, we're in this situation. We've been disconnected. This disconnected, like I said, began in the 1960s. Those promoting globalism, the globalist agenda, worked to discredit the founding fathers, our founding principles. I remember reading an article back about, even before I moved out here in Arkansas, an article about it where some guy wrote an article and carried it to Tucson Daily Citizen. He said, if George Washington were living today, he would not have qualified to be a clerk in the city hall. Really? The disconnection. So those promoting this globalist agenda know they have to disconnect us. They have to take away our national identity. Take us to no longer honor our fathers and our mothers. Disrespect our founding fathers, our founding principles, our Christian faith, our national identity. So the memorials have been removed. The old pathway is no longer visible. The old landmarks have been taken down, and we are, as Ezekiel says, we're in the belly of dry bones. We are the dry bones. And God speaks to Ezekiel. And Ezekiel looks in his belly and he says, they're dry, and then he says, low. They're very dry. We look across our nation today and we live in the belly of very dry bones. And in verse 11, the dry bones, in a sense, are speaking. And the dry bones say, and said, our bones are dried up. Our hope is gone. We are destroyed. When we look at our nation today, there are people out here who feel hopeless. They feel their hope is gone. They reached out for like Donald Trump, and we supported him also. But we all know that it's really not where the hope is at. And especially in 4 years or 8 years from now, if something isn't done, the demographics are going to be tilted against us. But in the meantime, we have this window. We have this window to reach out to our people that there is hope in the Lord. Now, we can either hide in fear, as some people suggest. We can be angry with those people who don't know any better, and we stand in judgment of them. We can do those things. But Malachi says, "Don't." That is what you do. Malachi doesn't say run in fear. He doesn't say, sneering look at those people, say you're going to get what you deserve. He doesn't say that. What does he tell us to do? He said that the spirit of Elijah is going to reconnect the hearts of the children to the fathers and the hearts of the fathers to the children. That's our mission. Each and every one of us. That's our mission. To make that connection again. To turn the hearts of the fathers to the children. And the hearts of the children to the fathers. Because then we can have the reconnection. And then the nation will be blessed. you would be under the grace of God. Our Father, we thank you for your blessings. We even thank you for your judgment. We pray that you help us all, each and every one of us, to really fully understand what our duty and responsibility is in helping to reconnect our people. We ask that you watch over everything we do. Keep us loyal and faithful. May we never wander to the right or to the left, but remain focused. We ask this in your holy and precious name.
Very good, Pastor Rob. If you'd like to get more information regarding our church services here as well as our conferences, you can register at Christian Revival Center, P.O. Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601. That's Christian Revival Center, P.O. Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601. Or you can email us at revival@southshore.com. Revival@southshore.com. That, you better welcome, please stand. John, you can come up and we'll have